Chapter 13. The Lawsuit. The first stage of the lawsuit began on Monday, February 17th. All the people who wanted to fight Troy Phelan's will had to declare their interest. Nate could question them to see if they were acceptable witnesses. Nate didn't want to spend 2 weeks in a room full of lawyers. His attitude changed when he met the Phelan heirs. The first witness was Mr. Troy Phelan, Jr. Nate introduced himself. "Are you currently under the influence of any drugs or alcohol?" he began pleasantly. "I am not," Troy Jr. said angrily. "Which one is your lawyer?" Nate asked, waving at the crowd opposite. "Hark Geddes." The lawyers were annoyed. Nate hadn't learned which lawyers represented each client. It showed that he didn't respect them. "How many wives have you had?"
"How many have you had?"
Junior shot back. "Let me explain something to you, Mr. Phelan," Nate said. "I will say this very slowly, so listen carefully. I am the lawyer. You are the witness. I ask the questions. You give the answers. Now let's try again. How many wives have you had?" An hour later, they finished with his marriages, his children, his divorce. Junior was sweating and wondering when it would end. Nate used one question to lead to another. No detail was too small for him to investigate. The afternoon was even harder. Nate asked about the $5 million Troy Junior received on his 21st birthday. "How was the money given to you?" Nate asked.
"It was placed in an account in a bank."
"How did you get the money from the account?"
"By writing checks."
"He wrote a lot of them." Troy Jr. never returned to college after he received the money. He simply partied. Nate revealed that Troy Jr. didn't work for 9 years. He played golf and football, bought cars, spent a year in the Bahamas, and lived in a grand style until his money ran out. Then he crawled back to his father and asked for a job. Nate talked about what Troy Jr. did after his father died. "You bought 2 expensive Porsches on credit. Now, 2 months later, you haven't paid a dime. You owe money for furniture. American Express wants more than $15,000. A bank is taking you to court because you owe them money, correct?" The witness nodded. They finally stopped at 6 o'clock. 10 minutes later, Troy Jr. was in a bar 2 kilometers away. The next day, they started again. Nate looked at Troy Jr. and recognized the face of a drunk, the red eyes, the pink cheeks and nose. He questioned Junior about the day his father died. "You saw the psychiatrists examine your father. You missed nothing?"
"No, I missed nothing."
"Your family hired Dr. Zedell, correct?" For 10 minutes, Nate questioned him about Dr. Zedell. He got what he wanted. Zedell was hired because he had an excellent reputation and was very experienced. Troy Jr. admitted that he was pleased with Zedell and had left the building believing that his father was sane. "So why did you fire Dr. Zedell?"
"Because he was wrong. My father fooled the doctors, then jumped out of the window. He was obviously crazy."
"What would have happened if your father had signed the other will and not the handwritten one, and then he jumped? Would he be crazy?"
"We wouldn't be here."
Nate moved on to talk about the money Junior owed and his failed businesses. He finally freed the witness at 5:30 day 2. He started the next day with Rex Phelan. Again, Nate asked hard questions about Rex's business deals. By noon of the following day, he'd revealed that Rex owed more than $7 million. There were a lot of court cases against him, and the FBI was investigating him. During the afternoon, Nate talked about the $5 million inheritance Rex wasted. At the end of the day, the Phelan lawyers hoped that the worst was behind them, but they weren't sure. Libigail came in early on Friday morning. Nate asked about her $5 million, and under pressure, she told stories of good drugs and bad men. She now lived with an ex-biker and ex-addict called Spike. "What would you do if you got 1/6 of your father's estate?" Nate asked.
"Buy lots of things," she said. "But I would be smart with the money this time, real smart."
"What's the first thing you would buy?"
"The biggest motorcycle in the world for Spike. Then a nicer house."
Her eyes danced as she spent the money. Mary Ross Phelan Jackman followed. The early questions revealed that she took her $5 million and lived in Italy for 3 years. At 28, she married a doctor and had 2 girls. It wasn't clear how much of the money was left. They lived well, but were heavily in debt. Ramble came in after lunch. After a few questions, it was obvious that he was as stupid as he looked. He said that he seldom went to school, lived alone in a basement, liked to play the guitar, and planned to be a rock star soon. He played no sports, had never seen the inside of a church, spoke to his mother as little as possible, and watched MTV when he was awake and not playing his music. Gina was the last witness of the week. 4 days after her father's death, she and her husband had signed a contract for a $3.8 million house. "How do you plan to pay for the home?" Nate asked. The answer was obvious, but she couldn't confess it.
"We have money," she said.
"Let's talk about your money," he said with a smile.
"You're 30 years old. 9 years ago, you received $5 million. How much is left?"
She struggled with the answer for a long time, but finally admitted that there was only $200,000 in her bank account. Her husband, Cody, had invested millions in bad business deals. As Nate left the city that night, he thought about the Phelan heirs. He felt sorry for them, for the way they were raised. But he knew that in their hands the money would cause pain and unhappiness. It was late when he arrived in St. Michael's, and as he passed the church, he wanted to stop, go inside, kneel, and pray to God to forgive him for the sins of the week. The next day, Nate sat with Phil on the front steps of the Stafford house. "I'm planning a trip," he said quietly. "I need to see my kids. I have 2 younger ones, Austin and Angela, in Salem, Oregon. My older son is a student in Evanston, and I have a daughter in Pittsburgh." "When did you see them last?" "It's over a year since I saw Daniel and Caitlin, the 2 from my first marriage. I took the 2 younger ones to a ball game last July. I got drunk, and don't remember driving back home."
"Do you expect the trip to be successful?" Phil asked.
"I'm not sure what to expect. I want to hold my kids and apologize for being such a bad father. But I'm not sure how that's supposed to help them now."
"You can't keep on blaming yourself, Nate. You're allowed to forget the past. God certainly has. Show your kids what you are now."
Later, long after Phil had gone home, Nate sat by the fire and began another letter to Rachel. It was his 3rd. "Dear Rachel," he began, "I have just spent a very unpleasant week with your brothers and sisters." He told her he was sending a check to World Tribes for $5,000 for a boat and medical supplies. A lot of good things, he informed her, could be done with her inheritance. At 8:30 on Tuesday morning, Sneed came into the courtroom. The lawyers had been coaching him for weeks. It was important that the judge believed his stories. Josh had known Sneed for many years. Mr. Phelan often talked about getting rid of him. Josh guessed that he was being paid to give evidence and had discovered that Sneed now had an expensive apartment and a new car. Sneed was ready. If Nate asked him whether he was being paid to appear, Sneed would lie about the $500,000 he had already received and the promise of a further $4.5 million. Nate introduced himself and then asked loudly, "Mr. Sneed, how much are you being paid to give evidence in this case?" Sneed thought the question would be, "Are you being paid?" not "How much?" He looked wildly at Hark Geddes. Mr. O'Reilly seemed to know everything. The Phelan lawyers shrank in their seats. "How much are you being paid?" Nate asked again.
$500,000, Sneed admitted.
"Have you already received this money?" Sneed didn't know whether to lie or tell the truth, so he said, "Yes."
$500,000 now, how much later?" Nate asked.
Anxious to start lying, Sneed answered, "Nothing."
"Who paid you this money?"
"The lawyers for the Phelan heirs."
"Did you go to them, or did they go to you?"
"I went to them."
Finally, Sneed was on familiar territory.
"I was with Mr. Phelan before he died, and I knew the poor man was out of his mind."
"How long did you work for Mr. Phelan?"
30 years.
"And you knew everything about him, right?"
"Yes."
"And you didn't tell anyone that he was crazy?"
Sneed thought he was doing well.
"It was a private matter."
"Until now. Until they offered you $500,000, right?" Sneed could not think of a quick reply. "In the last 14 years of his life, Mr. Phelan wrote 11 wills. In one of them, he left you $1 million. Did you tell anyone then that he was crazy?"
"It wasn't my job to tell."
Nate continued to question him. Late in the afternoon, he suddenly asked, "Did you sign a contract with the lawyers when you took the $500,000? A simple no would have been enough. But Sneed hesitated, looked at Hark, and then looked at Nate.
Of course not," he said.
Nobody believed him. Nicolette, the secretary, lasted for 8 minutes. She was 23, with few qualifications except for a nice chest, a pretty face, and blonde hair. Nate asked, "Did you ever have sex with Mr. Phelan?" She tried to look embarrassed, but said yes anyway.
"For how long?"
"Usually 10 minutes.
"No, I mean for how long a period of time. Starting in what month and ending when?"
"Oh, I only worked there for 5 months.
"Did Mr. Phelan have any marks on his body?"
Any of the Phelan wives could have told the lawyers that Troy had a purple mark the size of a silver dollar at the top of his right leg. Nobody had asked.
"Not that I recall,"
Nicolette answered.
"No further questions," Nate said. Nicolette left the room, and Nate slid a photo across the table to his enemies. It was a picture of Troy Phelan's body.
Nate didn't say a word, didn't need to. The mark stared out from the photo.